welcome to Talking Therapies, a podcast made together with Psychologies Magazine and the UK Council for Psychotherapy, or UKCP for short. I'm Susie Walker, and I'm the Editor-in-Chief at Psychologies. Each month on Talking Therapies, we'll be talking to a UKCP therapist about a range of topics. In this episode, we're looking at seeking permission to shine at work and how women can find it difficult to thrive.
And I think as a society in these days, our worth and our value are not placed on our own values within ourselves and who we are as human beings. Our worth and our value very much now is placed on what we look like, or the car that we drive, or the house that we own, or how much money we've got in the bank.
That was UKCP psychotherapist Lou Lebence. After overcoming her own mental health problems and trauma, Lou began her training as a psychotherapist specialising in trauma and addiction. Lou has since worked at the Priory Hospital in Southwest London, as well as in private practice in Central London. She's currently writing a brilliant online programme for the survivors of childhood sexual abuse. And you can find out more about Lou's own story in her TEDx talks, where she discusses madness and identity, by listening loulebence.com/speaking. Shortly, Lou will be talking to Matt Nichols, the head of content and engagement at the UK Council for Psychotherapy, to find out why we seek permission to shine and uncover where our lack of self-worth comes from. But first, here are some comments about self-worth and thriving from people we spoke to on the street.
I work for a science institution called the British Geological Survey, and so we're part of the UK Research and Innovation Network. So we are very much involved in scientific research, I think, and I think women are quite well represented. A large part of our workforce are women, about 40%, and we've got quite a lot of women in all parts of the organisation in management. Got to say, it's probably not equal, but it's I think my feeling is it's moving in the right direction.
So I work in tourism, and basically in free tours, and we have female guides and male guides. It's, you know, whoever's good at it, you know, whoever's passionate and likes it. So there's no gender division at all.
That's a hard one, because it's joinery, which is mainly male.
If you're a young woman doing this, especially, we have English tours and Spanish tours, but in the Spanish tours it's harder to be taken seriously, maybe, not because Spanish people, well, maybe, but they think, you know, it's harder to gain the legitimacy as a guide, maybe, if you're a young woman, because they think, what's this pretty young girl going to tell me? Whereas if I arrive big, bald, with a big beard, you know, I can gain their respect much faster. Yeah, which is obviously not a good thing. So maybe I go back and I say maybe there is some discrimination. But at the same time, sometimes if the girl or the woman, you know, she's friendly and approachable, she needs the other, it works the other way around. So sometimes the men, especially Spanish men, they can feel more threatened by a masculine presence, and then they can be like, you need to prove yourself. Whereas with a woman, they can be condescending and say, oh, look how cute, I'll pay her anyway. So, yeah.
Me personally, I like to be liked, which is one thing. And when I was at work, I used to help everybody. And the thing I was told was I was too nice, too helpful, and I had to learn to say no to others. Do a job that you love. That's what I would say. And fight for it as a woman.
According to government statistics, female graduates are more likely to work in slightly lower skilled occupational groups than men. And women still earn approximately 80% of men's median hourly wages. With women represented less in senior roles, how can we allow ourselves and others to thrive at work?
Hi, Lou. Thank you so much for coming to talk to us.
Pleasure. Today. Pleasure. Lovely to be here.
We're talking on the topic of giving women permission to shine, but there's sort of an elephant in the room, isn't there, really?
Slightly.
We've got a man hosting this.
Yeah, isn't that great?
Well, I defer to you on this one.
Okay. Well, I suppose in my experience, permission to shine isn't gender specific.
I think that's a really good point.
Yes, actually. Yeah. So a lot of our conversation maybe today could be applied to men as equally as it could be applied to women.
And this year's theme for International Women's Day is balance for better.
So yeah.
Having a conversation between the two sexes is really important.
Absolutely. And more dialogue like that.
There we go. So we'll dive straight in.
Okay.
I've got a few things I wanted to talk to you about. And I suppose we should start really. Do you believe that we need to help people at work by giving them permission to shine?
I do believe that we do, because I think that many of us in our younger years or formative years can be shamed for shining. And I'll qualify that by saying I believe that at school and in our conditioning, we very much want to fit in. That's our kind of main aim, if you like, as a teenager, is belonging, being part of the group, being part of the clan. And I don't know, maybe it goes back to hunter-gatherer days, where if we were ostracised and kind of set apart from the rest of the clan, we'd be left out in the cold. And nobody likes that. We love to fit in. And I think at school, sometimes, if we are very bright, or we're very academic, or we shine, or we're too talented, that can get us into hot water sometimes with our friends or peers. You know, some of those comments at school as, I don't know, goody two shoes or SWAT, or, you know, just by really excelling, it can seem to make some of us unpopular. And I never forget when I worked in radio before I worked in healthcare, I had a boss who used to say to me a lot, don't ever outspeak me at meetings. Never talk more than me at a meeting. And he used to get terribly upset with me. So I really do think that we have to encourage shine at work.
Absolutely. To be told not to outspeak your boss.
Yes. Yes. And I do believe this goes on, because I hear it from my clients and I hear it from my friends and colleagues that, you know, they can't sometimes feel, or they don't feel like they can have a voice or be fully themselves at work. And they do have to kind of hide their light under a bushel slightly.
Do you think this leads to some women feeling less than?
I think that whether we're women or men or whatever gender we are, there is a part of most people that I work with, and indeed all people that I know, that can feel less than, can feel that there is an element of them that isn't good enough in some way. So, and I think that comes out at work, and I think it comes out generally in our lives. And I think that does go back to very early childhood and conditioning. And when I talk about that, I say between the ages, normally to my clients, of 0 to 10, our brains are just like sponges. We're absorbing everything about ourselves, and we have no prefrontal cortex, the part of the brain which is able to rationalize or analyze or judge. That doesn't fully form until we're 25. So as kids, we take on everybody's behaviors and that of our parents and those around us to mean something about ourselves. So our limiting beliefs are really about the childish or the child part of us, that element believing in some way that it doesn't measure up. And then that belief stays within us until adulthood. So we have varying beliefs about us that are conditioned from our childhood. And really the way that we felt about ourselves as kids. And I'm sure some of the listeners can acknowledge that maybe they had a parent or a sibling or somebody close to the family who maybe told them not to speak out too much or to be quiet or to be still. And even that leads to us shutting down slightly when we're young, to not feeling like we have a voice, perhaps.
I'm trying to thing, because yes, it makes you automatically reflect on your own childhood and say, you know, was there a time when I was told.
Be quiet. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure for most children there is. Yeah. I mean, even when we're in a noisy classroom, you know, there are lots of times that it's actually, we do need to not speak all the time. But I think for many of my clients and many of the people that I see, it's constant critical parenting. It's constant critical teachers. It's constant, you can't do that, or you can't say that, or you shouldn't be like that. And it leads them to believe that they have to hide or cover up a part of themselves.
So it can almost sort of create an inadequacy feeling in someone.
Yeah, but I think it's very normal for everybody to have a part of them that does feel like it doesn't quite measure up in some way, especially in today's society with everything that we see out there in our Instagram, social media culture that is all kind of airbrushed and photoshopped. And, you know, even me at coming up for 52, would you believe, this year, I can even go onto Instagram sometimes and hear that internal dialogue of something critical to myself. I guess I've learned with time in therapy to be able to step back from it and not believe that part of me when it does start to kick off.
That's a really interesting point that you bring up about social media. I was recently challenged to unfollow the accounts that I followed that didn't make me feel good about myself.
Yes. And were those the accounts that were slightly less genuine or authentic, maybe?
I think it was the accounts that perhaps showed these elements of sort of perfect bodies or people having these perfect lives.
Yes.
I don't match up to that.
Yes. But of course, those perfect bodies and perfect lives don't really show us what's going on the inside.
Exactly.
You know, so it might be externally all looking wonderful, but actually, we don't really know what happens when the camera's turned off. And in my experience, and gosh, with 10 years at the Priory and 10 years in private practice, many of my clients with the biggest Instagram followers are the ones who feel more insecure on the inside.
We never really know what's going on.
No, not for any of us.
Especially not from one picture.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
So when you have been in this position, perhaps as a child of being told constantly, be quiet or suppress
who you really are. Yeah.
Your brilliance.
Yes.
How can we start to change that in adult life, or how can we bring that about in ourselves?
Okay. I think for lots of people, it's really interesting to teach them that we all have 5 ego states. And this is a model called transactional analysis, TA. And although it's not my primary training, I do really find it useful to explain it to clients, both in the corporate world and in private practice, because everybody gets it. And this model of TA basically says that we have 3 main ego states that any of us can fall into at any moment in any day. And those are that of parent at one level, adult in the middle, and child. So it's parent, adult, child. But of those 3 ego states, the parent splits off into 2 ego states, and one parent is called critical, and the other parent is called nurturing. And then also below that, the child splits off into 2 separate ego states. And if we have a critical parent growing up, and maybe even 2, we develop what we call a not okay child. So that critical parent, you know, you're not good enough, you didn't do that well, why did you do that? Always having a go develops a child that feels not okay or worthless or unlovable or whatever the limiting belief is. On the other side, if we've got a nurturing parent or one or two, hopefully, nurturing parents. We develop more over this side, and we develop what we call a free child or an okay child, which is that fun-loving, exuberant, light, lively, you know, wants to still go whooping down a slide or, at the theme park and kind of, wahey, that's our okay child. And in the middle is the adult who is us in the here and now. So that's who we are in this present moment. Now, you can be sat in a board meeting or round the table in the office at work, and you know that your boss is going to represent unconsciously your parent in some way. Hopefully, most of the time, your boss is an adult. We hope. But sometimes your boss is going to be a critical parent. And depending on your upbringing, that's either going to trigger the hell out of your not okay child, or if you're really lucky, you're able to stay an adult because you've had enough strengthening of your adult ego to kind of keep you there and not get knocked off kilter. And a lot of my clients come to me, and I would say they've had two critical parents. They've had critical bosses. They've had critical teachers. So they are very internally critical to themselves. They repeat that parental dialogue, and their inner voices are very hard on themselves, and their not okay child gets triggered all the time. They don't usually tend to have much of the nurturing parent. So my job is to help them create a kinder internal voice that says, you are doing a good job. You're okay. You're good enough. I love you as you are. I mean, for some of my clients, that's impossible. They couldn't say that. And then obviously to bring in more of the free child and keep them in the adult, in the here and now, without being triggered. Because if we get triggered into the not okay child, we feel really unresourced. We go really into that feeling, and sometimes you can almost feel like you've dropped into a 5-year-old or a 10-year-old or a teenager, you know, having a strop. And that's because of our conditioning and our childhood and our adolescent and our formative years.
So you can find yourself suddenly in a meeting.
Yes.
Going into a complete sulk.
Yes. Or going in a meeting in a complete sulk, or even asked to speak or come up with something and completely tongue-tied because you've kind of almost gone into fight, flight, freeze. It's happened to me on many occasions.
Yes. It almost just happened to me, I think. Yes.
What I will say is breathe.
Yes.
Just breathe. Yeah, because sometimes that can help us come out of the fight flight, and if we can get the nurturing parent on board to say it's okay, you're safe, you're all right, that boss who has just been shouting at us, we can sometimes realize that it's not an old trigger, but it is triggering old stuff.
So Lou, I just wanted to ask you, from the perspective of a woman, where can that lack of self-worth come from?
Gosh, Matt, that's a big question. And one that for women in general, gosh, probably dates back thousands of years and maybe a multitude of generations even. I mean, we were always, if you like, the lesser sex. And in some countries, are still treated as second-class citizens. I've travelled, I don't know whether you have, to many places where I've had to hide my face or walk behind members of the opposite sex, or even where I wasn't allowed into the same area of the city as men were allowed. So we've kind of got this environmental and transgenerational aspect to overcome first up. And then I think that each of us individually have our own worth and value mirrored to us whilst we're very young by those closest to us. So our primary caregivers show us the importance or our own importance by the gaze, the way that they look at us with their eyes and how they attend to our needs and mirror us as children and as infants. And by the age of three, we've taken on board messages by that mirroring and the gaze of our primary caregiver's eyes by how worthy we are and how much we are valued by them. Or if we've been unloved or uncared for or not attuned to by our parents, then we make that mean as very young children that we're lacking in value or we're unworthy in some way. And I think as a society in these days, our worth and our value are not placed on our own values within ourselves and who we are as human beings. Our worth and our value very much now is placed on what we look like or the car that we drive or the house that we own or how much money we've got in the bank. So they're very external ways of measuring who we are. And I think that you can get caught up in that's actually how we measure our own worth, is by material success and possessions rather than essentially what our nature is and who we are deep down. And I think that's really important to distinguish the two. We need to be worthy and valuable for our humanity and who we are, our beingness, not for the car keys or the bank accounts that we have.
It's a really good point, Lou. It's a great one to make us stop and think about where we take our own sense of worth from.
Yeah.
I wanted to move on to talk a little bit about this fascinating syndrome, imposter syndrome. I think it's something we all feel at some point in our lives, but could you tell me a little bit more about it?
I definitely could. Imposter syndrome is really about not feeling good enough or believing that you're going to get found out at some way at work. So there was a recent study of approximately 3,000 UK adults commissioned by somebody called Access Commercial Finance that found that two-thirds said that they've experienced imposter syndrome at work. And a quarter of them said that receiving criticism was the biggest cause of it. So again, going back a little bit to that critical parent, that critical boss, triggering within us a less than resourceful child going, oh my God, I'm not good enough, which is a limiting belief. So imposter syndrome for me is about the beliefs in the child, in essence.
Yeah.
And the belief being, and it is a really global universal belief. In fact, I don't know whether in 20 years I've ever met anybody without this belief on some level in their child. These beliefs aren't in the adult. They're not in our day-to-day present. They're kind of out of our awareness. But everybody I know on some level has got an I'm not good enough.
It's fascinating.
It's amazing, isn't it?
We are, no matter, if you think of anyone in the most senior level.
Yes.
To think that they might be still having that.
Yes, going on.
Feeling that I'm not good enough to be doing this. Someone's going to find me out.
Yes, absolutely.
And is there a way we can sort of challenge that belief in ourselves?
I think the way of challenging beliefs in ourselves is first off to be mindful of what we say. Be really aware of our own internal dialogue and try and see ourselves more as those ego states or different parts of ourselves rather than the I. Because when we start to realise that it's just a part of us that's feeling not good enough, if it's kind of old stuff, it's not our present moment self, maybe we can step back a bit. And as soon as we step back a bit, we create a bit of space. And then we start to see that all of our thoughts, we don't necessarily have to believe them all. Because actually, a lot of what we say to ourselves isn't true. It's made up. And it's just conditioned thought that we've had in our lives for sometimes 10, 20, 30 years. So that helps.
It's a really fascinating point. You have, as always, when we do these podcasts, I find myself reflecting and thinking about my own experiences. I think we probably all do as we listen to this. And when I took one job, someone said, you will feel like you are not able to do that job.
Yes.
Because that's natural to have that fear.
But I think in any job, particularly if it's new or we're in a new role or we've got to step up or we've been promoted or whatever, learning it, we never go in consciously competent, as the word is. We always go in being a bit incompetent to start with because we've got to learn the ropes. So I think that very growing pains is natural. And I also think that if you're not feeling a little bit of anxiety or fear, maybe you're not growing and developing.
That's a really good point. So we should learn to accept that.
Yeah, yeah.
That anxiety and fear in ourselves,
yes,
as a positive,
yes,
in some ways.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about sort of your experience with your clients in the therapeutic environment. Do you get a lot of clients bringing work issues to you?
All the time. I would say all the time, because we spend so much of our time at work. And because therapy really is about relationships, those and our relationship obviously with ourselves, but all our external relationships are based on the relationship we have with ourselves, whether it's at the office or at home or with children or with parents or with partners, it's all what comes into the therapeutic space. So yes, and a lot of my clients, I work with beliefs and beliefs that are conditioned from young, because if we can start to change those beliefs that somebody has about themselves, that's really, really helpful in being able to step up and be the best version of yourself at work without feeling like, as we said earlier, you have to hide your light or that you are an imposter.
And so what would you do within sort of your psychotherapeutic practice to help someone challenge those beliefs?
I tend to prefer these days using EMDR, which is eye movement desensitization reprocessing. And don't worry, you don't have to spell it because I still can't. It's a mouthful for anyone. And I love EMDR because really it takes somebody back to the insertion of that belief and the original significant emotional event. And once we can go back to when that belief was inserted, because normally with I'm not good enough, you can trace it back. Normally with I'm unlovable, you can trace it back. Or that I'm stupid, or whatever the limiting belief is. And then with EMDR, we go to the belief and we work out how much that part of us still believes it. And then literally with some eye movements, and I've actually got a machine for it now, so I don't just use the eye scan and my fingers moving from left to right. I have pulses that you put in both hands and headphones. What that's doing is it's stimulating the left and right hemisphere of the brain. And during the processing and the stimulating, when you think of that original event, what it's doing is it's bringing up the feelings on that memory and restoring, if you like, equilibrium in the body or no feeling in the body, so that belief can be dissolved and that memory can be moved across. And once the belief's dissolved with somebody and the memory's moved, they don't have to live with that belief anymore.
That's fascinating. I mean, I'm no expert in EMDR, but it's and there are obviously lots of different therapeutic approaches.
Oh, loads of different tools and loads of different, you know, therapeutic approaches to belief changes. I think the most fundamental thing is for people to know what their limiting beliefs are anyway, because earlier we were talking about once you've got awareness and once you have the insight, because unless you'd done therapy or coaching, you wouldn't know that you had these limiting beliefs. So you would just keep thinking that you got triggered or that you were sabotaging yourself or not performing or you couldn't speak up in meetings. And very often we can't trace it back to why. And I think once we've got the understanding of why, then we know what to do with it. Then we know, oh, okay, there's a part of me that's shutting down or not shining because I don't want to upset people, and I know where it comes from. Now I know that I can take hypnosis or NLP or EMDR or psychodynamic therapy or whatever approach to resolving my limiting beliefs and freeing myself from them.
And essentially, it's giving yourself that permission to shine,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, yes. It is totally giving yourself, because something blocks you, something stops you. It's like you've got one foot on the accelerator, wanting to go forwards with your career and wanting to do well. And then another part of the brain is going, break, 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 stop, stop, no, don't speak, no, don't put your hand up, no, don't kind of raise your head above the parapet. And normally that's the child in us, because the child has been shut down or put down or shamed or humiliated or whatever at some point. And so that memory is encoded. And that's what's trying to protect us in some way. You know, it doesn't want us to go through that again. So all of our behavior really unconsciously has a positive intention for us. Even if we think it doesn't, it usually does.
Yeah. I think that leads us quite nicely onto sort of a two-pronged question, if you like. What advice do you have to women in the workplace who are looking for permission to shine or within their general life? And then possibly, could I ask, from my own slightly selfish perspective, as a man in the workplace, how can I ensure that everyone gets permission to shine within my workspace? It's a big question.
I'll take a deep breath. But I think the answer is true whether you are a man or a woman or whatever your sexual orientation or gender. I think that if we can be more in our adult, if we can be more in our nurturing parent as leaders and bosses, if we can do the work on our conditioned childhood and our not okay self and our critical parent, which in essence is kind of like our ego, if we can reduce those feelings of insecurities and inadequacies within ourselves, which we all have to some degree, then I think we are much more able to allow others to shine. We're much more able to be those bosses that love to bring on and don't feel competitive or like somebody's going to step into our shoes. So I think be more nurturing, be more adult. And if you are in your critical parent, not okay child, get some coaching or some therapy or some help.
So recognize it in yourself.
Yeah, yeah, and where it's coming from. Because the critical parent, the part that barks or the part that's very strong or firm or can be a bit nasty sometimes, is only trying to defend that child within us that doesn't feel okay. And that part needs help, and so does the critical parent. And I always get my clients to read the very well-known poem by a spiritual teacher called Marianne Williamson called Our Deepest Fear. And I don't know whether you know this poem.
I don't know this one.
Okay, so can't remember it off the top of my head, but I've got it here. It's, our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It's our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? And your playing small doesn't serve the world. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking. so that other people won't feel insecure around you. We are all meant to shine, as children do, and as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. And as we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others. Now, maybe just look at how to be fearless, how to have less fear about being who we really are, about not worrying so much about what others think of us, and really about being able to shine and speak out, because then in a meeting or a group or with anybody else, we're saying to everybody else that they can be who they are and speak out and shine. And I think that's really the best that we can do, particularly on International Women's Day.
I think that's a brilliant, brilliant way to end this podcast, Lou. Thank you so much for talking to us.
Oh, it's been joyful. Thank you. My not okay child has been quite quiet. My okay child has been, yay, this is fun.
And I've taken a lot from that.
Oh,
it's
good.
Really helpful
for me. I hope lots of our listeners or the listeners take something from it.
I'm really sure they will.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Pleasure, Lou. Pleasure.
That was UK CP psychotherapist Lou Levence talking to Matt Nichols, the head of content and engagement at the UK CP. If, after listening to that, you feel you could benefit from some talking time with a psychotherapist, then go to the Find a Therapist section at the UK CP website and have a look through. The website address is www.psychotherapy.org.uk and look for the Find a Therapist tab. We are also featuring the subject of self-worth in Psychologies magazine this month, and you can find us online at www.psychologies.co.uk. We'll be doing a podcast each month for the next year with some of the UKCP psychotherapists, and remember to like and subscribe our channel to hear it first and to help others to find us too. I hope you'll join us again next month. Till then, thank you so much for listening and take good care of yourselves.